Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I am Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things.
Well, I forgot to say to you, because I know I spoke to you earlier, I saw a really severe A-pillar gash today. Really, probably the worst A-pillar gash I've seen on the roads what? In Great Britain.
Yeah, well, hang on, wait, you mean as in somebody's damaged their A-pillar?
Somebody's really gashed their A-pillar. The car, it was actually torn open.
A damaged A-pillar goes through me because it's so structural.
Well, it's over for a car. But this was actually an open gash on the front wing, and it caught the A-pillar and actually like cut it open a bit, and then the windscreen was splintered, and then the door, it had really caught the door where it had gone from the front wing to the door. Oh, it was so aggressive. And the person was still driving around, and they pulled into the fuel station while I was speaking to you on the telephone and admiring the Indian family having a picnic at whatever it was, 8 a.m. in a hybrid Toyota Estima, which looked amazing, with twin electric doors.
Ooh.
And on the other side was a first-gen Range Rover Spalt that had so much negative camber on the back because it had really sagged like a dog wiping its bum on the grass. And it did make me chuckle a little bit.
Did you see that photo that someone sent us? I can't remember if they emailed it or put it on socials a couple of weeks ago, of a Phaeton parked outside someone's house on the street.
I didn't see that. Was it saggy?
Well, you only knew it was parked because there was nobody in it, but otherwise you'd believe that it was undergoing profound hard acceleration because it was so squatted at the back. The front was rearing up, but there was nobody in it, and it was parked in a marked bay, so it was just suspension failure.
Did it look like someone had just casually played a trick on their next-door neighbour and ordered 7 tonnes of granite and just put it in the boot, popped the boot and go, can you just tip it in there? Yeah, just lower the bags there. The car's just gone all the way to the floor. It's on its arse.
There's a speed bump near where I live that is, it catches cars out. And I think it's sometimes it's the car, sometimes it's the driver. They've gone over too fast. And the other day, because you get that scrapey sound.
Mm.
But the other day, I could hear sirens. And it's on a thoroughfare, but not sort of super busy road. Sirens, police coming. And I was just out with the dog. I was like, oh, hello. And I was right by the speed bump. I was like, hang on, it's the speed bump. What are they going to do? Are they going to ease off? Didn't ease off.
You've got ringside seats, haven't you?
I know. I don't want to be one of those simpletons who stops and stares at things in the street, but I think I might have certainly slowed down a bit to get a ringside seat for this. Because I was like, and sure enough, they just attacked it full gusto. And it's one of those, it's an up onto and off the other side because it's part of a crossing, this speed bump. So you've got a bit, you've almost got two stages. And I think that's partly why some cars, it's wheelbase related and it's sort of, you know, spring and damper related. But Peugeot 308 Estate police car.
Yeah.
Went onto it. Well.
Did it back kick like a donkey, like an angry donkey?
Well, kind of, because it came off it. I was like, I was going to scuff. Front bumper slash sort of under tray is scuffing straight away.
Yeah.
But the scuff sounds definitely came from somewhere in the back. And then as it kept on driving off up the road away from me, I looked back and I was like, how much crap have they got in the boot of this police car? Because it was squatting like a shitting dog. I've never seen anything like it. I think they'd save some money. I was thinking, now maybe it's I presume it's still just a local, like what used to be called panda cars. I don't know. But because you know when they've got all the kit in, all the cones and the signs.
The sort of highway patrol type.
Yeah. But they always whack those in the back of a Well, it was a 5 Series till their engines started shearing themselves, wasn't it? And then sort of Volvos. But I think they'd go for something with self-leveling for a good reason.
That would figure.
This police force in my area has tried to save a few quid by just going, 308 estate will handle it. It'll be fine. It'll be absolutely fine. It's like, why are we on our 9th exhaust for that car that we've had for a month?
I do like it when you see a car or sometimes an unladen van do the back kick, the sort of donkey hind leg back kick, because they go over a speed ramp too quick. The front manages it and there's a bit of weight to kind of handle the damping, but at the rear it just rears up and basically hot bunny hops, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I've
been in things that have done that as well, and it makes a distinctive noise.
Yes,
there's a noise, and it's not very nice. It's not a bad bad noise, but somehow you just go.
It's bump stop kissing, but really, really like heavy contact, slobbery, drunk wedding kissing.
Yeah. Leaf-sprung vans are very good for that.
Yeah, there's a lot of bump-stop kissing going on. Yeah.
So what was the car that had the A-pillar
the gash? Severe A-pillar gash. It was a Mazda 3.
Oh.
And it was still being driven on the road, so I can only presume, because the thing is that that would get written off. So either the person has just done it, I don't know, themselves on their own drive or like in the car park of where they work and gone, oh, gosh.
Was all the damage sort of above the waterline? Was it like top half of the car damage?
It was on the top of the wing. The gash started on the top of the wing and it had torn the top of the wing open and then hooked the bottom of the A-pillar.
So there was no damage to the lower bit of the car or the bumper or anything like that?
No, suspension will be all right and stuff. It's just it's kinked the A-pillar and then it's lifted open. I bet the passenger door didn't open properly, but maybe
so
it did.
They'd driven into a parked lorry trailer, or that would be too high, wouldn't it?
Well, I was thinking like a sort of those, the back end of a lot of those truck trailers are very angular and unforgiving.
Mm.
Or a skip. Some of those skips have got those nodules on the side, which they put the hooks round to lift them onto the back of the lorry. I mean, if you catch one of those, it's curtains.
I took off the door mirror on a Renault Megane on one of those.
Oh, you naughty swine.
Well, the thing is, people may not realise about modern cars, and this is my excuse. Modern cars, the things like the door mirrors are, I think, designed to come off with a certain amount of force for pedestrian safety reasons.
Ah, yes. It's like somebody, a guy that I met fairly recently, that can dislocate his shoulder really easily and then put it back in, which made me feel quite unwell. But it's a car like that, isn't it? It's like an intentional dislocation, which you can hopefully, as long as you get it right and you're not too aggressive, you can pop it back in.
No, not in this case. Oh. It fully popped off and landed on the road.
Oh, okay, and right.
This was so long ago. This was the bum back Megane.
My favourite Megane. Well,
so this was a pre-production one that was one of the first in the country that Renault had lent to us at Top Gear so we could see what it was like, because we were planning not only to road test it but then to crash it. But not this particular one. This one was like they brought it in to, you know, sort of show off to dealers and things, I think. So they ideally wanted it in the same shape it was when it left their premises. And I had to ring the PR man and go, that Megane you left us, I'm afraid the passenger door mirror
is not on it.
I've sort of knocked it off. And he went, where is it? And I went, oh, it's all right. I went back and picked it up. It's in the boot. And he went, well, it's not much use there, is it? And I was like, no, it's not. I'm sorry.
Oh,
and
he was
quite cross.
Not cool with it. No.
Not cool with it. Which, you know, it was a stupid thing. I was looking for a parking place on a dark street and I just clipped one of those noddy things on a skip.
I think the thing is this A-pillar gash victim, I think what they're going to do, because if the car's fundamentally mechanically all good, And it's not an insurance claim where you've got to deal with other people. It's just your own silly fault, let's say. Just go and get it full of filler. Fill it up with filler and then just paint it. You know, like bad, you know, front garden repainting of cars. I've seen a bit of it.
Yeah.
It used to happen all the time. 70s, 80s, bit of 90s.
Yeah.
And I've done it. I've done it twice. There's something quite satisfying about it, getting your mates round, and I don't know, your mate needs his door painting and you all just try it. But The thing is, the car's now largely worthless to anyone apart from you. Because if it's mechanically perfect, and it's got lots of life left in it, it's either going to get bailed, or you just keep it and you just cover over the sins a little bit. I think I'm okay with that. I would do that.
But if you suspect the passenger door won't open because of the damage, so you're effectively just sort of bricking up the door, aren't
I'm you? Bricking so, up the door. I'm not going to stop using the car, no. I think the door's so, going
hi,
to stay.
I'll give you a lift. You'll have to get in the back, though. So every time you give someone a lift, even if it's just a work colleague, they have to get in the back.
No, I tell you what I do. I change the orientation of the seats a little bit. I turn the passenger seat into a captain's chair so that you could get in through the back door.
Rear-facing?
A rear-facing passenger, so they could chat to you and make eye contact with you. And you turn off the airbag, and then people sitting in the back could face them. So it's like a conference suite, but in a much smaller car.
So, that would work really well, though.
Yeah. And on a budget.
They'd be kind of able to make eye contact with you, wouldn't they? If they were talking to you as the driver, they could slide the seat back / forwards.
Yeah, it'd be like,
and you'd be sort of face to face,
like a sort of dentist chair dentist scenario, maybe. I mean, it could be
they
creepy.
Could recline it. Yeah, they could recline it and then be sort of lying with their head effectively on like the dashboard,
exactly,
having a chat,
a bit dentisty.
So talk to somebody in the back. Maybe they're having a meeting. This is, you're taking a couple of work colleagues, and they're going, actually,
that's
right.
I
just need to talk to Sue about those spreadsheets. So I'm just going to slide the passenger seat towards the back of the car.
Yeah,
and we can have a chat without disturbing you while you're getting on with driving your Mazda.
Why don't you pull a small curtain across, like a hospital ward curtain? Just pull it across, dividing them and then you. The curtain goes behind your seat and in front of theirs. And then they have you turn up magic radio, job done.
Yep.
And then when they finish, they do this. And all of this positivity is born out of a negative A pillar gash situation.
Because I'm thinking about this, and even the seatbelt. Well, no, the seatbelt's going to be too far away, isn't it? You're going to have to.
Put a harness on it. Would you just go and get, like, you know, an OMP four jobber? Forgot what you call them, four-point harness.
Four-point, yeah. A NACA crusher.
Don't get it, no, don't get it. That's a five-point, isn't it, or a six, where you get the nether region straps.
Yeah, yeah.
You probably won't need those, because obviously the impact would be different, the forces would be different if you had an incident in a captain's chair.
I'm just wondering if you really need the seatbelt, because, yeah, if you have a head-on, I mean, you're going... I don't know what's going to happen.
Get a second-hand winged rally seat. You know, the ones which have the wings for the helmet protection, the lateral force.
Yeah.
Get one of those.
But then you're going to lose the recline. And I like the idea that you can just sort of recline and lie there and just be chatting to the driver, but in a very relaxed position.
These are all incredible ideas that I've had some hours after seeing the car in question. I could have written all this down on a post-it and put it under the windscreen wiper of the Mazda 3.
Have you considered turning your passenger seat around? I wonder, could you do that? I suppose it's just all the same fixings, isn't it? Surely you just flip it around. I mean, I'm
sure you'd have to fabricate a few bits and bobs, but, I mean, as long as you turned off... I mean, I guess you didn't have to turn off the airbag, because if the seat was a decent, sturdy seat...
yes, but if you're in recline mode, dentist mode, let's call it,
you probably don't want the airbag to.
And there's a crash, you're forced backwards, from what your perspective, and then punched in the back of the head by the airbag.
You'd get the side curtain. Side curtain would still be okay, though, wouldn't it? Curtain should still be fine.
You mean the side curtain airbag rather than the curtain that you're going to install in a sort of S shape that goes around the.
Yeah.
Back of the driver's seat and then round this.
That's right. Not the S-curtain. No, that's right.
The S-curtain. the Nissan S-curtain.
Yes, the S-curtain.
I think this is a brilliant idea. Can't see any problems with this at all. In fact, you know, you've just saved a car from being thrown away.
Well, I think we're going to have to tighten our belts in the world try and maybe, like I said the other week, hold on to cars a little bit longer than we have done. This could do it. Also... You know those flip-out tables which come up and then across on, like on aeroplanes where you have your food? Yeah. You can maybe get one of those. There's a chap that I follow and know on Instagram, Stuart Aviation. He breaks salvage aeroplanes and turns them into furniture and art. I could say to him, "Oi, can I have one of those tables? Get one of those, put it on the captain's chair. Before you know it, you've got an actual conference table. I mean, you could even go the whole hog. Attached to the headlining, a pull-down screen, and then you could do a slideshow or PowerPoint presentation from the back of your slightly cramped Mazda 3.
I don't remember that car being that cramped, and it sort of feels like you've just created a little business Mazda, which you should go on Dragon's Den with this, because they'd...
Well, you turn a terminally damaged car.
Yeah.
That the one little Fetus
is thinking, I've had enough of losing all this money on heavy depreciating Maybachs and things like that. I'm just going to go Mazda 3 with a damaged A-pillar.
And the
passenger seat flipped around.
He's already on, but before the end of the pitch, he's on Synetics website looking up A-pillar kinked cars. And he's going, yeah, that'll do. There you go, Mercedes E-Class. Look, all really good, full service history, but terminal A-pillar kink. That's fine, that'll do me fine. Right.
Why? I mean, why don't? Because, you know, I remember the Renault Espace.
Yeah.
It was the first car I can remember where you could swivel the front seats.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s. And it looked incredibly exciting to see this as a feature. But you couldn't do it. You were sort of sternly warned that this was only to be done when the car was stopped, which for the driver makes sense, but for the passenger...
Makes sense.
I'm sure I remember that they did some research, and actually it would be safer if seats on airliners faced the back.
Yeah, and I've heard this.
Some RAF transport
military, planes. I think troop-carrying planes, you face backwards. And if anyone's listened to this who's military, has military trained or has a career in the military, I'm sure they can verify that you tend to sit rear-facing.
Yeah.
Because obviously your neck is already taking up the slack, as it were. So there is no whiplash to be had. It's always got a bit of padding. You have to make sure your seat's adjusted correctly. But we'd smooth out the ergonomics of this Mazda 3 captain's chair, A-pillar.
You're only at the prototyping stage. Well, the mental prototyping stage,
mental
really.
Prototype.
Yeah, which is, you know, the cheapest part of the process. But why don't they? You're saying this, and joking aside, it sort of sounds like quite a good idea, gashed A-pillar or not. It's like, what if you wanted to create a little sort of, like a, you know, isn't a company doing it for Priuses, and then...
Yeah.
You've got a sort of nice little Uber setup where you can get more people in it without accidentally sitting on the driver's mobile phone and bag.
What about, and in the old days it would have been a bag full of CDs, whichever CDs you were going to take on the trip that day, which I was trying to explain to my daughter recently. But she was like, what? So, because I took her out in the Beetle, and it obviously has a CD player in the glove box. And she said, but like, what about if you want to listen to something else? I said, well, I used to stash under the seat a little zip bag which could carry 10 CDs. So I used to rotate my different 10 CDs, as I'm sure you did, and loads of people listening to this. So on a daily or weekly basis, I'd be like, right, this week I'm going to go for a different 10. Let's have a bit of metal there. Let's have a bit of Britpop there. Let's have a bit of rave there or whatever. And then if you're bored of the radio, you know you've got that selection of 10 under the seat ready to go.
Yeah.
But,
it was quite a process, wasn't it? The sort of ceremonial deciding of the CDs that would go, even more if you were going on holiday.
Oh, hell.
I used to go on holiday with a Discman and a fat wallet of CDs that could probably take about 30 discs or something. And
my wife still got
that agony
that wallet.
Oh, my God, but what if I want to listen to the soundtrack to The Beach while I'm on holiday? Better put that in there. Oh, God, I haven't got any Lloyd Cole whatsoever. I better bring some of that. And it's just, it was quite a process.
Well, it was real human brain Spotify, wasn't it? Where you just have to quickly fast forward through the next 7 days and go, right, how much driving am I going to do? What car? Because if I was driving abroad, like if I was testing a car and taking it back to Germany, or which I used to do a reasonable amount of, you know, continental driving for the purposes of work, I'd go, right, but if I'm in Germany, I do want some German-esque music. There would always be Kraftwerk. Kraftwerk would have to be in there. I know it's cliche. Right, let's put Kraftwerk in. Got to do that. And it always felt right. But I don't know if people... Because I'm a bit odd in that I still like CDs and I still like rummaging my CDs and I don't use Spotify. I actually don't know how to use Spotify. I've just admitted that in a public space.
I mean, it's not complicated. I feel like the reason you don't know how to use it is because you haven't tried.
No, I haven't. I mean, do we need an app for it? I don't even know. Presumably you do. You need to register.
Yeah.
I hate registering with stuff. I'm a bit of a commitment phobe. It just irritates me. So that's maybe why I haven't. But yeah, maybe I will.
Then you see, yesterday I had to go out and just do a bit of driving around because I was writing about a car and I hadn't really driven it. So I went and
good
did a
excuse.
Big drive. Well, I thought, you know, on balance, for professionalism's sake, I should probably drive the car a bit more before I gave my verdict on it. And so I went for a big drive, which was quite nice. It was a lovely day. And I went up into the sort of Cotswolds and
Welds,
the Midlands.
It was lovely. Welds.
Oh, I saw a burnt-out combine harvester, which was very sort of dramatically weird thing to see. I came around the corner...
Yeah,
and I could just see, sort of on the kind of brow of this field as it rose up, I could just see a fire engine in the middle of a field. And I thought, well, that's an odd thing to see. And then as I came further round and the hedge dropped down, there was just the burnt-out hulk of a combine harvester, which
it's
presumably just put out. But it was, I don't know, there's something unsettling about a burnt-out combine harvester. I think it's because combine harvesters are like the elephants of the farmyard. There's something very benign about them and sort of friendly, even though obviously they've got massive rotating teeth.
They're the most expensive implement in the farm as well, really. But yet
they
use the least. It's kind of weird. So they sit for all of the year apart from 6 weeks or something. But in that 6 weeks, they get used intensively and they have to be absolutely on the button. Because if they're not, you know, there's money... at stake. And I don't know if I forwarded it to you, but our local village, the farmer in our village, had to abandon ship because his combine caught fire. And he ran away, and it went completely up. Well, the tyres exploded, everything. And it caught half the field. They managed to save the other half. But some embers then went over and did about 4 acres of another field. So it's been pretty bad. It's been a hot British summer for... wildfires.
Is this a thing then? Do combines catch fire a lot? Is this?
They're vulnerable.
I've heard of it before.
Because of the chaff and all of the straw. Because, of course, straw, when it's 40 degrees outside, there's straw. You've got an engine in the middle of the machinery that's got a hot exhaust. And what happened to this one is he went under a low tree and they think a twig snapped off and went down next to where the exhaust is inside the main kind of belly of the combine, and then it set fire to some hydraulic oil and some other gubbins, and then the whole thing just went up. He said it went up fairly quickly to the point where he really had to abandon ship. And
well, on a hot day, they must be so hot because they're running constantly and they're not getting any speed up, are they?
So no.
I mean, how they keep those things cool anyway is a...
Oh, you want to look... If you want to see something atmospheric, Richard, look at the heat shimmer coming off a combine harvester at dusk. It's got its lovely lights on the front. And because I love it here, when you know it's going to be a hot summer night, they stay out. They do an all-nighter, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And they do look like the sort of, I don't know, the sort of Terminators of the night going up and down with these huge spotlights on, the chutes at the side.
Yeah, they've always got good lighting, haven't they?
Always dropping.
They're mucking about.
In another life, maybe I would have been a farmer, or maybe I would have just been a farm watcher. One of these people that just stands and watches other people doing hard work. In fact,
there's
I had
me
a,
watching police cars go to speed shops, and you just open mouths, gawping at farm equipment.
Well, that's why basically I aspire to work on Countryfile, because you just turn up at a farm, which is probably really hard work to keep going, and you go, yeah, this all looks like hard work. Anyway, tell me how hard it is, and then they tell you, and you go, "Yeah, that's great." Anyway, I'm going. I'm going to eat some of your fresh produce, and I'm going to go. Bye.
I know somebody who works on Countryfile. I can put in a good word for you if you like. Oh, he listens to this podcast, actually.
Get out.
Hello, Rob.
Somebody off of Countryfile listens to this podcast. Well,
I promise, yes.
One day, I mean, I'm not getting any older. One day, I'd love to do that. I mean, probably something closer, like a halfway house between Countryfile and this motoring journalism type thing would be, I guess, Cardening, which we've talked about before. And actually, I drove through, you might know, because you're from Cheshire, I drove through a village called Carden this morning. Have you ever heard of it?
Carden?
C-A-R-D-E-N, Carden.
No, where's that?
And it's in Cheshire. It's near, quite near Middlewich.
Oh, okay.
Or somewhere like that.
I'm not familiar with it, but...
And there was a Carden Park Hall, and it looked like a very nice, stately home. And I thought, now that, if we were going to do a Cardening Fest, that would be perfect for it. So I thought, maybe I'll write them a note to the owners of said stately home and go, listen, you've probably got some immaculate lawns and gardens, formal gardens. Do you mind if we turn up with a couple of MOT failure Vectras and just tear the place up?
I bet they'd be delighted.
Yeah, we got a special stunt troop who are going to turn up in a load of Isuzu Troopers with extremely aggressive mud tires on them. But 8
the
psi
stunt troopers,
and they're going to do some really dangerous things around your rose formal garden. Yeah, it could be, but yeah, it's a real place called Carden. Which made me
okay.
Yeah,
good. What I was going to say about going for a big drive the other day was that apart from seeing a burnt-out combine harvester, which I found a bit spooky,
it is a bit macabre, isn't it? It is.
I had six music on, and they were playing lots of really good music and stuff I hadn't heard before, and I was desperately trying to remember while I was driving the names of all these bands and artists that I wanted to listen to more. And in the end, I pulled over. And I thought, there was one particular thing, I thought, oh my God, I'll listen to this. And this is the thing that we now were sort of spoiled a little bit. I just went on my phone and went, right, well, I'll just look up this artist and I'll start streaming their stuff straight away. And it's all magically there. You don't have to wait. Because in the old days, I've had to go home, remember the name, then go to HMV and buy the CD and then come home and put it on. But now, we are like spoiled children. We just go, I want it now. And if I don't immediately like it, I'm going to stop listening to it. And it's a bit of a shame in a way. But and the other thing that happened to me, sorry, I was listening to the radio and Craig Charles does this Kettle of Metal feature on his afternoon show on Six Music.
Kettle of Metal.
Where he gets a listener calls in and picks three metal tracks that they would like to hear played, and then he plays them. And I was thinking, oh, it's going to be like, you know, Pantera and Iron Maiden and stuff like that. But no, three bands I'd never heard of, and it's all quite good. I quite like metal in a way that sort of, I like overhearing it. I probably wouldn't seek it out, but I just like it. And there was one particularly, this really good track, now actually I can't remember the name of the band. But it was very, very good. I think they were called Those Damn Crows or something like that.
Ah, that rings a bell.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And it's that sort of melodic metal.
Yes.
And it's a bit like dance music in that you sort of know where it's going. It's to a kind of, like, not a formula, but there's certainly a template to which you sort of conform to make good examples of that music. And
I like
so it's
that.
Got, it sort of drops and builds and it's intense and it's really fast. And I suddenly realised I was driving like an absolute bell
flute.
Full flutery. I was driving a Skoda Fabia as well, which is probably for the best because it didn't have a lot of power. But suddenly, having just been driving, you know, in a sensible way for the whole time I was in the car, suddenly I was like, oh my God, absolutely redlining this thing. And it just came off a roundabout and it was like full sort of like little like four-wheel drift onto the carriageway. Yeah, and I suddenly went, whoa, just calm down.
You were police driver, you were holding back the gears, weren't you? I bet you
were. It's DSG with no paddles, this. So it's, but I was in spolt mode. I just started thrapping the shat out of it. And it was all because of the metal.
So you're not blaming it on the boogie, you're blaming it on the metal.
No, blame it on the metal. I just thought, if you were trying to reduce road accidents, that maybe we need to look at people listening to metal.
Well,
there's nothing against metal. I quite like it. I mean, fair play to you. Metal is, and I always think metal enthusiasts, in my experience, I used to share a flat with a metalist, and all of his mates were really nice. And I've been to things with them, and I always think metals, it's like they all go around trying to look scary because they're incredibly good natured people. It's like they're like those sort of fish or butterflies that try and look more frightening so they don't get eaten.
That's exactly it, but they're actually
really nice.
They're not aggressive fish typically. Yeah. I find that with people with tattooed heads. They're normally quite sinister looking, but actually they're just really into tattoos. They're not necessarily done prison time or, I don't know, you know, a member of a sinister gang or anything. But no,
they just like tattoos.
Yeah, that's just cool. I'm not
having a go at metalists, but I do think that there may be, if you wanted to, you know, if you're an insurance company, you're going, well, we can reduce your premiums by putting one of those, you know, tracker box things on your car. Make sure it's wired into the stereo. Because if it starts telling you, oh, they're listening to a lot of metal, there you go. Mm.
It analyses metal algorithms and goes, oh, I spy a lot of double bass drum pedal here. I think this is going to be energetic.
It's like 170 beats a minute. And it's like, wow. It's like, oh, it's an incredibly complicated guitar run there. It's just, yeah, I was quite shocked at how, almost subconsciously, I just became deranged behind the wheel. Admittedly, like, really good track, which I meant to go and look up what it's called so I could listen to it again, preferably not in the car, maybe when I'm doing something that just, you know,
when you're in something a little bit less Nürburgringy than a Skoda Fabia.
Well, I feel like it's sort of metal maybe could be used more productively for just speeding up mundane tasks, like, I don't know, washing up or something.
So metal chores.
Metal.
That could be.
I'm just going to do the washing up.
I could get into that vacuuming to something like some real speedy.
Oh my God!
New metal. I could quite enjoy that. Or what about? Well, this could be dangerous. This could be a double-edged sword. Roadside car washing services, where they're quite quick and efficient people anyway, and they're often purveyors of the no-name energy drink. But imagine if they're normally in disused petrol stations, aren't they? Imagine if you stuck a load of speakers up in the old roof kind of shelters and put a medley of metal on and just to see if the work ethic kind of spooled up a bit more.
I think it might be too much. Too much energy, too much speed. And you'd get home and you'd realise they'd taken all the paint off your car. It looked like one of those Audi A8 show cars from back in the day. It's like, it's just pure shiny metal now. Metal!
Metal, that's
You've
what it's
taken
all about.
My car back to the metal!
And they were like, wow, that's brilliant. That's exactly what we were aiming
for. Yeah, that's the look we were going for.
Yeah.
Or that they've got the lance, you know, the hose lance. But what you haven't noticed is that it's black paint that's coming out of it and they've made your car completely metal.
I'd like that. I think if anyone listening has never tried metal, do try it. Mm. There's a time and a place for some metal, both old, you know, trad and new and modern.
Yeah, this stuff that was on the radio was very much new metal, but I'm down with that.
Did you ever used to listen to things like Linkin Park?
Not really, no.
Okay. See, I was quite an enthusiast of things like Linkin Park, maybe a little bit of Limp Bizkit.
Definitely didn't like them because I thought Fred Durst was a twat.
Well, I think he might be a massive oboe player, but I don't know.
I would say he is definitely,
he might be a dripping tip of a man, but I'm not sure if he is because I've never met him. But I suspect he's probably 50 now and he's still wearing a cap
and the rest
with white socks pulled up too high. And those low shorts, which I did wear in the early to mid-2000s, but that was quite a long time ago, so...
I'm pretty convinced he was 41 when Limp Bizkit were at the height of their powers. He's like fucking Pitbull. He's too old to be capering on the way that he does.
We've said this before, haven't we? No, Pitbull is sort of 24/7 office Christmas party guy. Pitbull's heart's like it's the combination of a sort of VTEC or a badly hashed aftermarket turbo system where someone's not quite dialed it in properly. It's perhaps over boosting. Overfueling, and it's going to go pop at some point. I reckon that's the problem with Pitbull. He's going to...
It's not the only problem with Pitbull, because there's also, his music. But anyway.
But if you had to be, if I had a coin and on one side it said DJ Khaled and on the other side of the coin it said, you're going to be Pitbull, what would you choose?
Just throw the coin in the canal and run off.
You'd fly tip the coin. Even if it was a really valuable Roman or...
No, it's going in the canal. Can't take the risk. Mm. I mean, you're saying you have to be Pitbull.
I reckon you either emulate that person for a year or you listen to their music indefinitely.
So I've got to be an absolutely, like a shaven-headed shaft of a man in a fucking suit and sunglasses after dark for a year. Christ alive.
It just looks like he's going to sell a fleet of Mondeos and then take some uppers.
Well, that's it, isn't it? I think he thinks he's, what does he call himself, Mr. Worldwide, but he just looks like a fucking estate agent.
Well, he's a worldwide estate agent. But also, do you know what he is?
Worldwide Properties Limited, servicing the Barnet area.
Ford became a worldwide brand a few years back, didn't they, where they said all our models are going to be worldwide available. So maybe Pitbull is basically a Ford sales principal. It's just he doesn't call himself that. And we call him something else completely differently. But...
Ah, oh, dear.
Well, I didn't expect to talk about that. I was going to apologise to... I was going to make two apologies. Mm. One, I was going to make a public apology to... And I suspect they don't know the podcast or care. But a small group of Japanese people who were in the centre of Dolgellau in Wales last night.
Mm.
And I drove into the town, or is a village. I don't actually know. Probably town. In my... Tokyo Taxi, my JDM Johnny cab, on a beautiful sunset evening. And
I can see where this is going already.
I just drove in, okay, because I was coming to stay over and film there for the Late Break show, and I just drove around the corner. I was nearly at my destination, so I was sort of looking at the sat nav, and it was like, you're nearly here. And then I saw this group of people who were just about to cross the road, and I was going slowly because it's narrow. Mm. And they all just stood there with like one finger pointing and the jaw down, the lower jaw open, as if to go, is that what I think that is? And then I drove past them, realised that I'd seen what they were doing, missed my turning and had to, because it's a one-way system, I had to go round again, went round again like 1 minute later. They're on the other side of the road taking pictures of the historic Welsh Square. And I go past again, but this time I do a peace sign and tilt my head to one side at them. And I don't say konnichiwa, well, because you wouldn't hear me. But I actually did a peace sign and a head tilt. You know what I'm doing. And again, they were both like, is this... There was five of them. Like, what on earth? We're in the middle of rural, slate mine-esque Wales, and there's this bloody taxi going by. It was quite funny.
Because it's the equivalent of being in sort of rural Japan, I suppose, in sort of some beautiful little village with a temple and the blossoms and everything, and then a rattly old TX Ford drives past. Yeah. And you go, what the
hell's that doing here? Why?
Why is that here?
So many questions.
Yeah. Well, I thought you were going to say they tried to get in and ask you to take them somewhere because they assumed that you were sent to get them.
No, they were cool. They were, I mean, they
did you talk to them?
No, I didn't. No, but I know they were cool because they were polite because they're Japanese. But so that was that. And the other apology.
Were you staying at the Royal Ship?
No, I was staying at a chap's house who was teed up this amazing barn find that I filmed, which I'm not going to reveal yet. But let's just say it was pretty good, and it was 80s, and perhaps hot in the world of hatchery. It was a great day. It was a great day. The car was good, and we did manage to fire it up. And
I didn't realise you were staying in Dogathlin.
Yeah,
that's where my dad grew up.
I don't know it that well, but because I normally know a little bit more north than that. But it's a gorgeous, and of course the weather we're having at the moment, it was absolutely spectacular, like weird Mediterranean weather with the contrast of your really dark heavy slate and. What else do they make the buildings out of? It's not quartz, is it? What is it? It's slate and.
I don't know. Just mostly slate, but I suppose it's not the walls. Aren't slate.
No, the walls aren't slate. They use the.
It's a stone of. It's probably
granite.
It's granite. Is it?
I think it's extremely thick walled cottages, but yeah very distinctive architecture.
I don't think I've ever been to Dogathlin when it's been sunny, because it's one of the dampest places in Britain. From my memory of childhood visits there.
Well, that's why I was blown away. I mean, I drove there in shorts. I drove home in shorts. I woke up with a T-shirt on. I never needed to put the barn find fleece on because it was like 20 degrees at 7 a.m. So unless I was going to permanently give myself, I don't know, early onset BO at the start of a shoot, I was like, no, don't need that. But no, it was great. But I had to drive there in the taxi because of car logistics was such that I basically didn't have anything else. And I thought, but I tell you what it has done. People talk to me a lot about EV range anxiety, still going, are you sure you don't, you get anxious and you can't find a charger? I'm like, do you know what? Genuinely, I don't really get range anxiety anymore. It's past me. But I get LPG anxiety, Rich.
This is real. Runs on LPG.
It solely runs on LPG, and the reality is a lot of LPG filling stations have been removed and subsequently replaced by rapid chargers. People like BP and Shell, they're investing more in EV, and LPG is seen as being a bit, I guess, old hat or a bit niche. And so it's actually a problem. Like, you have to really plan your journey. And although the range of it's quite good, I think I get 700 kilometres out of a tank of LPG. Okay. Because it's all in kilometres, so I've got a post-it.
So it's about 400 and something miles.
Yeah, so it's good. It's good. And it's an unstressed engine. It's a nice cruiser and stuff. But even so, you kind of don't want to run out, because if you run out, you can't just get your mate to get a gallon can and run back to the car. And
could you grab your highly pressurised can and get me some LPG, please?
Yeah, so it has actually made me worry. I've downloaded a couple of LPG apps, which is like a really boring form.
Are there apps like there are for electricity?
Yes.
Electricity. What the bloody hell? What am I trying to say? I don't even know. Electrical cars.
That's right. Electrical horseless carriages.
You know what I mean. Anyway, right. There are apps that are there for LPG.
There is an LPG app, yeah, but it's not as slick as the EV ones, because I guess the take-up's not as much. But I did find a couple of stations, and it's basically me using it and people with American motorhomes, which... They're standing there for about 20 minutes, and you think, where the hell? Where's all this LPG going? So that was pretty cool. And the other public apology I wanted to make, I thought of this when I was driving home this morning, was I need to apologise to Audi, because I reckon I was a bit down on the Audi A7 when it came out. I thought the back end looked silly. I didn't like the profile of it. I thought it was just like, it doesn't work. It's not as good as the CLS. And one, when you've got a bit of congestion in traffic and a car keeps coming past you, and then you go past it, and then it goes past you, and you see it like five times over the course of a journey. This was happening with me with an Audi A7, and I kept looking at it going, do you know what? I was wrong about that. That's a good-looking car. That's looking better with age almost. And
yes.
I don't know if there's other cars which you or listeners have done that with. You've dismissed a car, And now you're coming back to it going, I was wrong. I'm going to put my hand up and say, I was wrong. That is actually pretty good. And I needed to give it a second look.
So I've always quite liked the A7. But I think the first one is better looking than the second. It's a bit less fussy.
Yes, that's right.
Although I saw, funnily enough, you mentioned this, because I saw a new A7 a few days ago. And it all in black. And I was a bit like, ooh, drama. It's got a very, it says there's something quite, we've talked about this before, it's sort of, there's a certain sinisterness to it that I quite like.
Mm. It's almost a little gangster, isn't it? It's almost sort of slight hangover from East Germany, underworld. I'm going to say,
yeah, it's a good car for spearing across West Germany to do a handover at a bridge.
Germany
was still divided, which of course it isn't, but that's not the point.
You could pretend it was and just live through. It could be your equivalent of cosplay. It would just be
Cold War cosplay. Just constantly, you just get caught, people in Berlin coming out and they're finding you trying to get over their fence. They're just like, why don't you just come and ask? I would let you in my garden if you really want to. No. Oh, God, it's the guards. Run.
Yeah, get your mates to shine torches at you as you're trying to run across at night to a
constantly.
Runner. Constantly. Oh, Cold War cosplay, but it could be fun, but it also might be slightly terrifying.
I think people might start not wanting to hang out. Oh, God, he's here again. He's going to start trying to bribe me with Levi's again. It's
Oh, gosh,
he
Porter's
says he's got
coming.
Some Michael Jackson CDs again. Fucking hell.
Oh. Well, no, you'd be like, Richard's gone a bit strange recently. He's listening to loads of metal and he's just fascinated by the Cold War and just really still looking over his shoulder.
Fascinated by the Cold War because it's the war that you can sort of enjoy because, you know, relatively speaking, not many people died, and so it was a sort of threat, wasn't it, rather than the actual conflict. And that's, but it's also, it gave us the greatest aeroplanes and espionage and all of that sort of stuff.
Mm. It's like two drunk guys on each side of the road, and they're spitting insults at one another. Come here and say that. No. Yeah. You come here and say that. And like,
fine. We're going to develop some kind of new supersonic bomber aircraft. No, you're fucking not. Come over here and show
you're
me
bluffing.
That. Well, we're not going to tell you, babe. We do.
You've not got that in you. I fucking have,
you
mate.
Haven't got it.
Don't
you
test
ain't got
me.
The technology. Oh, you guy. Hey, wait. My wife says you come round the other night. You copying my drawings for the supersonic bomber aircraft, you shit. And so on.
Right.
I've got your cat.
Yes, exactly.
And the cat back seeing the old bridge at midnight.
When you're asleep, I'm going to throw a fucking stone through your car.
No, you're not, because I'm telling the fucking NATO about you, you fucking twat.
Oh, you're grassing up NATO, are you?
Yeah. NATO. Come on, then.
So that's the Cold War, then, wrapped up in a sweet little...
Two Cockney men arguing in the street. I've got some things to read out because of last week's podcast. You were talking about your air drumming mishap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. One of our patrons, John Bridge. Hello, John. He said, this week's story of Johnny's air drumming exploits reminded me of an occasion a few years ago when I was driving in Oxford. While stuck in traffic, I heard some loud drumming coming from somewhere nearby and spotted a Metro which had its own drum kit arranged around the driver in the passenger seat and hanging from the headlining.
You're joking.
I followed the Metro, and each time we stopped, the driver produced his drumsticks and got so stuck into some serious drumming. When the traffic moved, the sticks went away and off we went.
What?
I followed the Metro for a while, and it ended up in a car park where it pulled into a space. The driver concluded his journey with a Ringo-style fill and then got out.
Seriously? Yeah. That's amazing.
Well, that's incredible, isn't it?
I need to know more. The Metro drum kit.
Metro drum kit.
That, I hope it's still around.
I know. Metros, I know they were famed for their space efficiency for a small car, but they weren't that big in size.
No.
So is it like a child's drum kit? It must be fairly decent to be able to generate enough noise to be able to
heard
outside a car.
Acoustically, quite challenging, because if you're right next to all the drums in a car... with a low roof, you could do yourself quite some hearing damage with that.
Well, maybe you had the windows open then.
He must have had the windows open. It'd blow his mind otherwise. I mean, he could fully Keith Moon it, wouldn't he? But he'd have to have some sort of ear. I've just had a thought. Hang on. Wouldn't the captain's chair Mazda 3, wouldn't that be perfect? You have the captain's chair, you take the back seat out, or you,
yes.
Or the back seat is quick release, and you just have a Insta drum kit. You go, do you know what? I'm not carrying any. I'm not having a conference today, but I'll tell you what, I've got to do a long journey. Jed, do you fancy coming along for the ride with me? Do you want to do a couple of drum solos? Yeah, no problem.
Nice.
Yeah, could you do the beginning of EastEnders? And can you do that bit that Phil Collins does? Or,
well, I was going to say, now, in a way, for space reasons, the Metro drummer would have been better off with a sort of 80s-style electronic drum kit with those octagonal pads, because it'd be a bit more compact. But then I suppose you'd probably have to put a heavy-duty battery in there, or the...
A leisure battery in the back.
A leisure battery.
With a twin alternator set up so the car's wheezing when it's idling.
We've had another message. I said last week I was curious as to whether anyone had ever crashed as a result of trying to wave thanks to someone who'd just let them through.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we haven't had any specific stories about that as yet, although a few people on the socials pointed out that this was a bit of a David Baddiel monologue on the Mary Whitehouse experience in the 90s.
Oh.
For people who remember that. He did a monologue where he claimed that he was so desperate to try and wave to people to be polite that he would crash into them.
I don't remember that. I did used to watch some.
I didn't remember that either,
I was very young when the Mary Whitehouse experience was current.
Well, so that was obviously a joke on there, but there, I haven't had any real stories as yet. Still hopeful. But we had a message from a patron who's asked not to be identified.
Oh, nice. These are always good.
He says, hi, guys. You asked for stories regarding thanking people and crashing into said person. I would rather you keep this anonymous, as I was a rather big idiot. It's not quite a thank you crash, but something similar. I was dropping a friend off at work, and to get back home, I had to do a quick U-turn. I did what everybody does as they drive past a mate, the honk, look, wave. However, what I hadn't realised was I'd slightly strayed out of lane and drove into the path of a nicely specced XC90.
Oh.
The man was very cross and found it impossible that I'd managed to do something so blatant. I didn't help the situation by showing my appreciation of his XC90, which he took as sarcasm and then kicked my now ruined 308 GTI.
Oh my
God. I let him off with. What I've learned from this is don't take your eyes off the road. And that my mate now thinks I'm a terrible driver and has never asked for a lift since. This was 4 years ago.
So, oh, my gosh.
Thank you, so quite a lot anonymous of, patron.
Quite a lot of damage sustained in that comment.
But also, having crashed into somebody, trying to smooth things over by going, oh, I really like your Volvo, and then thinking you're being sarcastic and kicking your car.
I think I would take that as sarcasm, wouldn't you?
And there's one final one, which is again from a patron in Norway, Jan Henrik Engo. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. Almost certainly not. But hi, Jan.
Hi, Jan.
He said, I've almost had the crashing while politely waving thank you happen to me once. I work as a driving instructor and had taken one of my lesser talented students out onto the twisty, narrow roads of Western Norway. When we inevitably ran into oncoming traffic, my student got so occupied trying to awkwardly show his appreciation towards the helpful lady in the opposite direction that he nearly ran our car into a ditch on the other side of the road.
Oh.
Upon later reflection, I realised I should have seen this coming. During a previous lesson, the same student and I were cruising down the motorway doing the speed limit of 90 kilometres an hour. Suddenly, he removed both his hands from the steering wheel, closed his eyes and held his hands in front of his face. He then proceeded to sneeze violently multiple times while I was leaning over from the passenger side trying to maintain directional stability. When this medical emergency came to an end, I asked him what the actual fuck he was thinking, taking his hands off the wheel and closing his eyes while doing 90 kilometres an hour and so on.
Yeah.
His explanation was simple enough. He had to sneeze. And on a completely different subject, Jan says, I saw Guns N' Roses in concert a couple of months ago. They were absolutely shit.
Oh, seriously? Seriously? Yeah. Oh,
that's
no.
That's a twofer there. Jan's covered a couple of things we've discussed last week. But
Jan, yeah. You got straight to the point with the GNR reference. That's a shame to hear. It's a shame to hear.
Yeah. I'll be honest, I was expecting, as I read this for the first time, I was expecting he was going to say they were awesome. They took the roof off it. They're the best band in the world. So it was quite amazing that it ends like that. But sad times for Axl Rose, if he's trying to court the Norwegian driving instructor market still. I just wanted to read those out because they're good. Three good messages from patrons covering a couple of things that we talked about.
If you want to become a patron from as little as £1 a month, I will share with you some A-pillar gash photos.
Did you take photos?
I did, yeah, because I knew you. Oh. I knew you'd say to me, "Hang on, if you're going to reveal this sort of information, did you manage to get?" The journalist in me was like, "I've got to try and get a photo of this because it's a proper gash. It's a proper gash."
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, this is exactly the sort of bonus material that we do put on our Patreon.
So. Yeah, this is priceless, borderline priceless. I didn't take a picture I didn't take a picture of the picnicking family and the incredibly specced JDM. Steamer, and I didn't take a photo of the collapsed suspension range spot, but just use your imagination of how it was sagging and what's the word? Crouching, staggering,
squatting
range spot, hidden danger. Yes, exactly that.
I said last week I would talk more about the Dacia Jogger that I'd been driving, and I'm reviewing it for the Sunday Times, so whenever they get around to publishing that, you can read more of there. But I actually liked it in the end. But did I say this to you on the podcast or were we talking afterwards about...
Jogger?
A bit worried that the jogger's got sort of... The seats seem quite sort of hardy material. And actually, you know, I had my kids in there and they left all manner of shite everywhere and it cleaned up nicely. But the carpets are very... They're that really sort of puby car carpet.
Puby.
Stuff stuck in it. And I was thinking, I wonder how this car will fare under hard use. But then I noticed that the front seats seem to have zippable covers on them.
What?
I thought, well, that's actually quite a good idea. So if the seat covers, I'm going to look into this, but if the seat covers are machine washable, I mean, that's quite a good idea, I suppose, except that we've got an armchair that's got a removable cover and it's machine washable and it's a light colour. And our kids have obviously ruined it over the years and a couple of times we've taken it off and bunged it in the washing machine and it comes up quite nicely. But have you ever tried to get a zippable seat cover back on a seat?
No. Is it like one of those
freaking nightmare?
Is it my kids have recently gone camping and they've got those sleeping bags which can pack down into quite a small bag.
Oh, God, yeah.
But once you've got it out the bag, there's a certain tactic. There's only pretty much one tactic to get it back in the bag. And if you're not fully concentrating, it'll take you about four goes. And that's what...
At least. Because these sleeping bags, the ones that sort of... They're sheeny, so they're made of like... And the bag is the same material. So you've got this incredibly slippery material.
Yeah, they're made out of boxing champion trainers material, you know, the guys that mop the brow and take the gum shield out and then squeeze water on their face and then put the gum shield back on. It's the tops that they always wear. It's the same material.
Yeah. It's satiny.
It's very satiny. Satiny sheen. But
it's the sheeniest material known to man. And when it touches itself, it's like zero friction, isn't it? It's a low mew situation and you're desperately trying to...
Very.
Is that one where you push one side in and the other side just pops out and then you're suddenly in some kind of Laurel and Hardy sketch?
It depending on if you've got time on your hands, sometimes it's satisfying, sometimes it's absolutely infuriating. You've got to pick your moment with those.
My experience with seat covers, zippable seat covers, certainly armchair covers, is that it's particularly if you've washed it, because I think it's probably shrunk a tiny bit, though it's supposed not to. And if you get it wrong, like if you get somehow you just get it a tiny bit skew if, this once tidy looking armchair that you've got sort of looks like a bad taxidermy of a dead armchair because it's all just a bit off. It just doesn't look right. It's got lumps in places it shouldn't have and this doesn't line up. It's really vexing. I just thought, imagine if you couldn't get the cover back on the driver's seat of your car.
What would it just be? The foamy, metally carcass?
God. Well, I can't touch foam either. Foam goes through me, so I just... I mean, not literally, but I just don't like the touch of dry foam.
Can't do
so
foam.
That would be it. I'd have to sell the car.
What with the but the discount you'd have to give on the it would just look like somebody's died yeah, in the seat and you had to like make an excuse and
what happened
it.
Here? Nothing. I just want to spruce up the interior, but unfortunately I can't get back on again. I don't know. I should have. I mean, if I was being a proper journalist, I should have taken one of the seat covers off to see what happened. But I just had this fear that I wouldn't be able to get it back on again, and
it's
I
logical.
Didn't.
I'm glad you shared it with us, though. Although your fear of foam.
Yes. It's a well documented fear. I'm not alone on this. I know other people suffer from it. I'm sure of it.
Would you. The unzippable. Is it easier to use modern day kind of carpet shampoo or type thing and the sort of fabric cleaning potions you can get in detailing and valeting kits than unzipping the whole shebang and either machine washing it or using old school method, you know? Washing up bowl full of soapy water and just giving it a good scrunch. Classic. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it, particularly, you know, the recent hot weather, it would be, you'd just leave the doors open, wouldn't you? And you could just...
Yeah, you could just wet vac the whole thing and let it... In fact, this is perfect if anyone needs to wet vac the carpets or they've got slightly stainy seats. And normally the stains look terrible, but they're actually from just water. You get water marks on the seat. Innocent watermarks, you know, not yellow watermarks. Now's the time to do it. Because like you say, you can leave the car open all day and it's done.
Yeah.
Or if you've got a garage, leave the windows down all night in a warm garage. It will just bake it out. It'll be wonderful. That's my bit.
Well, there we go.
Yeah, there you go.
Consumer advice from Smith and Sniff.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, yeah, if you're interested in the Dacia Jogger, I think it's quite a nice car for the money, certainly, you know, and seven seats for whatever it is now, 17, 18 grand for a mid-level one, it's, you know.
Well, it's going to check, the price will change by the end of this podcast.
Probably will, yeah, but that's what it was. Warning, the value of Dacia may go down as well as up. We should probably bring this to a halt, but before we go, I have three things to tell you, which I can't find now.
Oh,
here we go. Yeah, I can find them. Hooray. Here they are.
Yeah.
So, the three things I have to tell you are, one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Phylate Shake Show, in which Johnny orally pleasures Middle Eastern potentates.
You this week, filth monger.
It's Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, the Emir of Qatar.
You're a wrong.
That was sent
you're
to me. That was sent to me by a listener called Michael Scott. And I said to Michael when I wrote back to him, I got that in. We get sent a lot of these, and a lot of them seem to be on the same theme, and they often involve the word lake for some reason. But that one really tickled me. And I tried to read it out loud to myself when I was on my own in the kitchen, and I couldn't read it without laughing. So I'm quite pleased I sort of got through that because it really tickled me.
Is that Phylate Shake Show?
The Phylate Shake Show.
Phylate Shake. Awful. Awful.
The real YouTube channel is, of course, called The Late Break Show.
Yes.
Lots of videos on there, electric transit.
Civic Type R detail, walk around because no one's allowed to drive it. And by the time you listen to this cast, there'll be another video out, which has just escaped my mind. But I think it's an electric converted BMW 2002.
Ooh.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, just get over there and watch some stuff. Subscribe
and also, you're going to have an area at the Retro Rides Show.
The Gathering. We are on September the 18th, Mallory Park. We're going to have the great guys. If you've never been to a Retro Ride Show, brilliant. Pre-2001 cars, an enormous selection of vehicles, but also very good camaraderie and atmosphere. Mm. And they're letting us have our own enclosure, which we're inviting people to come along to. Come buy a ticket, and hopefully we're going to arrange, we're going to curate an interesting display of pre-millennium, pretty much, vehicles. And I'll be bringing some of mine, and we'll have hopefully some guest vehicles too. Come along.
Cool.
I dare you.
Second thing I've got to tell you is I've got various books out. One of them is called How to Be a Motoring Journalist by Roy Lanchester. It's a spoof autobiography of a fake drunk man who writes about cars. Write about what you know. And the third thing that I've got to tell you is that if you're familiar with the song Son of My Father by Chicory Tip, a terrible song.
I've never heard of it.
Oh, it's just, it's just, I just one of those songs that really just, I just find disagreeable. Which is strange because it was written or co-written by Giorgio Moroder.
Really?
Yeah, and it's not at all the kind of thing you'd associate with him, but yeah. And it went to number one in February 1972 in the UK. So predated what we would know Moroder for, which is, you know, Donna Summer.
And Electric Dreams.
Donna Summer. And all that.
Donna, yeah. Off of Summer. Well, I, the fourth thing that you should know is that I had a, mm-hmm. I had a slight epiphany driving back, and I realised that Tiff Nadell is actually the sting of the car world. And the reason why he's the sting of the car world is because he's Sting plays a musical instrument and is a lead singer, and also Phil Collins, right? Very, very accomplished drummer and also lead singer. Tiff was, I reckon, the first TV car guy to chat and really succinctly review a car whilst driving it on the limit to a high standard. So I think he's either Phil Collins of the car world.
Well, he is either Sting or Phil Collins because they're both rhythm section players, which is hard, isn't it?
Very hard.
I think it's meant to be like playing bass and singing the melody is meant to be really difficult, I believe.
Well, it'd be like doing a Rubik's Cube whilst playing Scrabble, whilst singing Greensleeves. You'd be like, "What? I can't do all this shit."
Yeah. Which Tiff could actually do whilst also power sliding a BMW M Coupe around Cadwell Park.
He would.
But that's because
he's Tiff. Yeah. Whilst ordering another Carpaccio of leather jacket via Bluetooth hands-free. Yeah.
How thin is it? Hold it up to the light. Can you see through it?
2 microns. Too many. Yeah. God bless you, Tiff. I love you.
Oh, we love you, Tiff. Okay, well, that's that for this, but we will do it again, of course, next week. Until then, thank you ever so much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye. I talk about cars and many other things, and that's the point of the
many
podcast. So there.
That's the whole point of it.
Yeah, so
that's why we say it at the top.
Yeah, exactly.
Pay attention.
Fuck you, San Diego.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.